friends, welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Mr. Chris Casso.
Hello.
Ms. Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
How is everybody this evening?
Just peachy.
Conscious.
Conscious.
Yes.
That seems
we
to be
are alive.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Otherwise, this would be kind of a boring podcast. All right, we're coming to you not live. We're coming to you
almost live.
Oh, that's a whole different thing.
Undead.
We are undead today. We're coming to you from Comics Dungeon in beautiful downtown Wallingford, and the first thing I'm going to bring up is I read today. That Kate Mara, who plays Sue Storm in the new Fantastic Four movie, hasn't actually seen the film. Now, forgive me for bringing up Fantastic Four. We kind of beat that dead horse a couple weeks ago.
No, we can resurrect it and kick it a couple more times.
But
that's fine.
I get the feeling that I'm going to be talking about it a couple more times, or at least one more time, because I got something planned. But Kate Mara, having not seen Fantastic Four, just reminds me that I have absolutely nothing in common with Kate Mara. I actually have seen that movie.
Wow, that was a great setup, Ben.
I thought about it. I thought of that in the car. All right, so getting to the real news.
You should call her, you know?
Getting to the real news, Frank Miller is coming back to The Dark Knight. And Chris, you have thoughts on that?
I'm not looking forward to it.
Well, I think what you said in the show notes, or at least in the when we were planning this, was, and it will be horrible.
Yeah. Well,
am I not mistaken? It's not. He's co-writing. He's not even drawing it.
He's plotting it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
He's so sitting in a dark corner going, yeah.
It might not
happen.
Actually be horrible
up.
Because Brian they basically put other people to do all the work.
And isn't Joe Kubert?
Yeah. Not Joe Kubert.
Adam
Kubert. Adam.
Joe has passed. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those things of like, well, that's probably going to improve its quality a hundredfold because if anybody read the sequel to the original Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Strikes Back, it was pretty horrible.
Was that a Frank Miller joint?
It was totally Frank Miller with his wife on colors, Lynn Varley. And then he also did, just a year or two ago, maybe longer because I'm suppressing the memory, a book called The Holy Terror, which was probably supposed to be Dark Knight 3, but then somebody at DC actually had a brain cell fire off and be like, no, this is pretty racist.
Yeah, this is one of the most offensive things I've ever read, and no, Frank, we're not going to publish it. Yeah.
And what is this new one called? The Master Race.
Yes.
What about Batman would have been racist? I'm not familiar with this.
Well, so the Holy Terror thing, what basically was Batman versus Al-Qaeda. Except in the context, as you're reading the story, if you're Muslim, you're instantly Al-Qaeda.
Okay.
And it was also just visually horrendous. But it's like,
crazy.
Before you can actually talk about it in any kind of relevant social context, you had to get over how badly executed it was, how horrible the art was, how stiff the dialogue was. It was just the definition of a bad comic.
It was expensive. It was a hardbound book that was like $30.
Yeah.
And the illustrations were sparse, as in stingy, not sparse, as in we're exercising creative minimalism.
Not Alex Toth's sparse,
it was awful.
Yep.
And I really felt like I was looking at a project done by someone who had no respect for their audience.
Yeah.
Which could be said about the sequel to The Dark Knight as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just an out-and-out insult to his readers.
Yeah. And it was late, so as a retailer, I'm doubly bitter. But,
Frank Miller's history with Batman, though, kind of goes back. Isn't he, I don't know, is he credited with, like, revitalizing the comic?
He kind of is, and he kind of is also credited with inspiring the look that Tim Burton put into his films.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Knight and Year One are two of the most popular Batman stories ever.
Uh-huh. Frank went off the rails years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And but it's entirely possible he never was on the rails to begin with.
Yeah.
The rest of our culture caught up to that, but it's really frustrating to have read his books when I was a younger person, been kind of moved and inspired by them, and then grow out of that and then grow into this sort of animosity toward his vision of reality, which is actually quite fascistic. And when by the time we get to Holy Terror, it's like there is no excuse for how grotesque this comic book is.
Yeah. And Old Star Batman was kind of...
Oh, I forgot all about that. Oh, man.
Yeah, that one was... Yeah. It isn't until like issue 6 or 7 that I realize it's a joke. And then I realize it's not a joke, but it is a joke.
If it is a joke, it's a joke on his audience, which is, you know, an unkind one at that. Mm-hmm. I'll be the first one to get crabby about white male privilege geek culture. I admit that. That's kind of one of my hobby horses. But there's also something to be said of just out and out slamming your readership, because I don't trust that he was trying to, give his readers a bracing slap in the face or a splash of cold water. He just said, you're morons, and you've been morons all along, is what I got out of it.
And with this new title coming out, it's even more of like a money grab, it seems like, because they're $6 and what is it?
A billion variants.
Yeah, and how many pages is it?
Oh, it's not that many. It's
like 30, maybe?
Something like 30 and plus tons of ads. They're also doing something strange. They are including a mini comic inside of it done by a different creative team that takes place, if I understand it correctly, in the world of the Dark Knight and this future of the Dark Knight. But then they release a director's cut that enlargens that mini comic and merges it into the story, and you pay $13 for that.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. So it is super money grab. I mean, right now I have to decide how many I have to order, and there's the main cover, and then there's a 1x10 cover, a 1x25 cover, a 1x50 cover, and a 1x5,000 cover that's sketched by Jim Lee.
What does that mean, 1x10, 1x5,000?
For every such and such number, like a 1 in 10 is for every 10 regular covers, there's one variant cover. And it's a special just cover. Inside is exactly the same.
Right. That we are allowed to order.
That we're allowed to order.
And because still pay for.
Purchase 10.
Gotcha.
Prior.
Oh, so this 1x5,000 means you have to buy 5,000 of these?
Yes.
What is that, cover made of gold?
No. So, yeah.
Just straight up, drawn on
and the thing is,
$100 bills.
You guys, I'm actually kind of looking forward to reading this, and I will buy it because my theory, and I always reserve the right to be wrong, is that they're using Frank Miller's name as a brand, because I think that every other creator involved in this project is a creator of integrity. So I will be hopeful until I read the first issue, and then you can. You can tell me I was wrong. Well, you can vilify me. You can pillory me.
We just had a customer tonight that came in, and because we were so not for this comic, he was like, well, that just actually makes me curious. Now I want to read it because you so are not looking forward to it. I want to know why you're not looking forward to it.
That'll definitely increase sales. I mean, it's a name factor. It's Batman, so no matter what, it's going to sell.
Of course.
But there's the curiosity train wreck factor.
Right.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Moving on. There's been an editorial shakeup at Dark Horse Comics with a new editor in chief named. Dave Marshall will be replacing Scott Alley as the EIC of his publishing line. Now, Alley is transitioning to the executive senior editor. Now, this caught my eye because Dark Horse, I mean, I like Dark Horse. They actually sponsor a local sketch comedy festival in town. And but what this tells me is that there's trouble in the forest.
So I don't think it's any particular trouble, but they have definitely, and I don't want to say the word stale, but they have lost momentum from what they were back in the 80s and early 90s and all that. And the thing is that momentum is all in Image's house right now.
Right.
And they definitely have, they still have Hellboy and they have a lot of great properties, but even then they just lost the Star Wars property. I guess loss would be the right word.
They can't find it?
Yeah. Well, and all that stuff is no longer canon. That's the thing that really
But Marvel's still publishing some of it.
Yeah, they
which
are.
Which I, yeah, that's
I don't get
recollecting
that.
Yeah.
Recollecting
it.
So,
some of those Dark Horse Star Wars comics were terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it had a big following too. So
yeah. I'm mostly just thinking this is they need change from time to time, and I think this is a good way to do it. And Scott Alley is actually a really good writer, and I've heard a hell of a editor. So I think like now he has more time to focus on project building,
right?
And I think that's probably a really smart move on their part.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those things that happens in business where you get a really great creative who gets moved into management, and there's just kind of like a flopping like a fish out of water. They're really comfortable being a creative.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, anything that just kind of change the consistency of what they are right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe bring out more things, because I feel like they do have some titles that are good, and some, you know, some things like Hellboy that they can...
Main Strays.
Yeah, but I think that having more stuff kind of getting up to like maybe an Image level would be kind of cool to be able to have more Dark Horse titles, because right now, like off the cuff, like I can't remember what's Dark Horse. It's not memorable if that it's from them in particular, but I know that they have good titles. Like they've got the Harrow County, right?
Yeah, or it's licenses, because then it's Buffy and video games. They're doing, I think, the most video games right now. They've got Halo, Tomb Raider, Dragon Age, and a couple others.
Doing Assassin's Creed, or is it somebody else?
It's someone else. Okay, that's Titan, I think.
Ah,
cool. All right. I realize that looking at this next topic we're going to talk about, everything's kind of dour and down for the news this week. I also, this isn't what I was going to talk about, but I also read today that the Pacific Rim sequel is on hold indefinitely right now.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys saw this headline.
Oh, no.
I was at work and I saw the headline. That's weird. Just had a chance to skim the article. I don't really know why. Well, maybe I'll put a link to this in the show notes. But yeah, I was really bummed about that because I know what fondness we have for Pacific Rim. Oh, except for Cole, of course. So
is that fresh? Is that fresh today news?
Fresh today news. Yeah,
because I just actually had like a product update from the distributor like just last week, so I would have thought nothing had changed.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we'll look that up. I'll put that in the show notes. I got to remember to do that. Anyway.
Cole is just frowny faced over there.
This is not a frowny face. This is my sad clown face.
Oh, it's a sad clown. That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm being a sad clown.
That's very accurate.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway. Moving on with our barrage of bad news, DC has canceled 8 comics recently.
Right.
You saw this. I didn't write down which ones.
So the
Batman 66 was one of them.
Actually,
right, which was on its way out.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think it was.
And Cessation Comics is kind of a miracle that actually had a chance to exist. I love it.
How long did that run?
Oh, we're past number 12?
Oh, really?
I don't know. See, these are digital first comics. Those two are first.
Yep.
And I always had the feeling that they were limited runs anyway.
Okay.
But they are canceling Omega Men, and they are canceling...
Justice League United.
Yep, Justice League
United. Gotham by Midnight. I just looked it up.
Right.
Lobo, Doomed, and where was it? Green Lantern, Lost Army.
Doomed was... Sorry, doomed from the start.
Yeah.
Green Lantern Lost Army, I actually did really like the first couple issues, but it didn't have any momentum. Most of this stuff, it's just the new 52U, DCU, whatever, is floundering as far as the timing and how they launched everything. But then they're making these weird decisions, like Prez was announced as a 12-issue series, then cut to 6 issues, then canceled, and then they say, no, it's just going to have 2 6-issue miniseries because people actually like it.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like they're jumping the gun on it. Like, they tried a couple of different things out of their normal genericness, but I guess they're in the red enough that they're like, okay, cut it. It's not doing anything. Like, if it's not right off the bat catching... Don't give it any time. Just get rid of it and then put some 90s comic out there again.
And I would imagine that their overall numbers are like in the less than 5,000 copies to be able to warrant this kind of murdering.
Yeah.
So, which is from a large corporate standpoint, understandable. But also means that there's no good marketing happening, no good advertising for these things. Because all of the talk about books like Prez is word of mouth from the fans.
Yep.
And there's been like little to nothing significant from DC being like, hey, we have something good. Please buy this.
Right.
Instead, it's reserved for Batman, Dark Knight, Electric Boogaloo. So...
So, I mean, I say this every time we bash on DC, but and I know that they're too big to fail, but every time I see something where DC has canceled A-Comics, I'm like, can we put DC on Death Watch?
But they did that. I mean, they did that New 52. They put out all these different titles, and they didn't some of them didn't last that long.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, no, that's kind of their new policy of chaff cutting, is that they don't offer a lot of patience. So that's my impression anyway.
Yeah, no patience. I feel it's almost like a 6-month cycle now.
Yeah, which it just seems really fast. You know?
I do remember us talking about Batman 66. It may not have been at this table, but I remember having a conversation about people were very optimistic, really enjoyed that book because it was at least a bright spot in a lot of this dour DC stuff that was happening.
Right.
It was an antidote to a lot of that. And sadly, I only read like the first two issues and I appreciated what it was, but you know.
Yeah.
And the artist that was on there did kind of like a pop sort of style to it. And I really liked that style, and then it just went to kind of a more generic look, which I didn't appreciate as much, but it had Jeff Parker on it, and I love him as a writer, so it was really fun.
I feel that focus on that era, that type of Batman, though, is kind of a flash in a pan, because we just finally released the DVDs. Let's remind everybody that Adam West exists.
And they cranked out the new action figures, and they're all... Right, they were trying to capture a baby boomer nostalgia. It's very tenuous nostalgia. I mean, because you know, that's my dad watched that show when he was in college.
Well, I don't know. The baby boomers are thinking about retirement these days, and Social Security is not going to cover it for them, so they don't have a lot of money to spend on comic
card designer action figures
on a random bust of Adam West doing the Batuzzi dance. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I know. I want that
they
on my bookshelf when I retire.
Yes, they do.
If it's him holding the bomb, that would be cool.
That's a great one.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Or hanging from, I think, the bat copter or from something with
the shark.
Shark
the bomb shark. Yeah, the bomb shark.
And the shark attached to his leg that he should have lost by now. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great show.
Those are great. Yeah.
All right, that's a little bit of the news. That's just some of the dour news this week. Sorry to bring everybody down. I'm so sorry. Let's go on to Book Report. Cole Hornaday, what did you read this week, sir?
Oh, we're on to Book Report already. I read one of the most enjoyable reads I have read in a very long time. It's a graphic novel compilation of a series by Grant Morrison and Fraser Irving called Annihilator. This is one... freaking high concept story. In fact, I don't know if I can, I'll just kind of give you a brief rundown on it. Washed up Hollywood screenwriter Ray Space is caught in a downward spiral of broken relationships, wild parties, and self-destruction. Out of luck and out of chances, he's one failed script away from fading into obscurity. Little does he know, he's about to write the story of his life. So this guy is this total Hollywood nihilist, and he's struggling to write this screenplay. And while he's struggling to write the screenplay, we overlap with the story of this space station, not unlike the plot of maybe Event Horizon, where this is equally nihilist and sociopathic artist living in this, you know, space station on the edge of a black hole. That guy's name is, he has the greatest name, Max Nomax. And all of a sudden, Max...
Wait, what?
Max Nomax.
This is the plot. Hold on. Max Nomax is the character in Ray's screenplay, who then shows up in Ray's reality and helps him write the screenplay. So there's this back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it's just so psychedelic Grant Morrison. It's so fun. And Fraser Irving's artwork is just unprecedented here. I've always liked Irving. I always thought he was a fascinating artist. You know, he did stuff like Zombie. They remounted the Milestone Zombie series in 2011 that John Rossum had written. And then he also drew Clarion the Witch Boy that was part of Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers of Victory. This graphic novel read like a movie. I had the best time with it, and I cannot recommend it enough. The artwork is terrific. The story is fascinating. Contemptible characters turn lovable by the end and vice versa. So it was, cool. I had a great time with it.
All right. Nicole Lamb, what did you read this week?
I read Harley Quinn, the Road Trip Special. And
tonight on a very special Harley Quinn.
Yeah. So it's totally like a fluff piece, you know, like it doesn't really have any purpose but to just enjoy it for silliness.
Okay.
So what drew me right away was the art on the inside cover, very much pinup, and it's very tongue-in-cheek in that, like, they even point out that, hey, this first page is eye-catching. It's girls in bikinis, and you should keep reading, you know? Like, it's basically like, we're here to try to catch you.
Right.
In Sexy Lady Times, yeah. So it's basically Sexy Lady Times, and I totally ship that they're a triad, even though they're not. And what I mean by that is all three of the girls are dating. It's Harley, Catwoman, and Poison Ivy.
And they're all dating each other?
Yeah.
Okay.
In my fan fiction
world... In my
world,
we call that a thruple.
A thruple? it's just them going on a road trip together. There's, you know, Harley's uncle passed away, and she's got stuff. It doesn't really matter what it's about. It's just fun. Catwoman goes because she wants to steal this one jewel. And
the artwork is very cartoony.
It's very cartoony. Yeah. It's very cutesy. Like, every time Catwoman shows up, she's got, like, a kitty face on her, either her top or her bottom. And they make fun of the fact that it's sexy girls and, like, guys are always trying to hit on them, and then they whack them over the head and they're like, ha ha, goodbye. So it's serious. It's just silly. It's just a one shot. And I had to get it because I like silly, tongue in cheek, pinup-y things.
Uh-huh.
And this definitely fulfilled that for me. It kind of reminded me, like, I guess a little touch of Bruce Timm, the way that the shape of the girls a little bit. And then, Fearless Dawn's writer-artist Steve Mannion. That's like some obscure thing by Asylum Press that I really like. That's very much pinuppy. Like, every time you see a girl, she's like on her tippy toes and her booty's kind of sticking out. And she's very cute but sexy. So I really enjoyed that. But I would only say, like, get it if that's kind of your jam. Because otherwise it really doesn't hold any purpose. It doesn't really...
Yeah.
Hold much weight as far as the storyline, but it's highly enjoyable.
I imagine it's a pretty quick read.
Very quick read.
Yeah. So would you say, it being a quick read, is it worth the $6 cover price?
For me, it is.
Okay.
Because cool. I like the art so much.
Cool.
So to me, it's almost like I would want to have, like, posters of it and different things like that. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of think of it as part of that.
Okay.
But as a read, I don't feel that it's worth the $6 necessarily.
Gotcha.
Yeah. If it was a cover price, I think the story is cover price value.
Gotcha.
But the art is $6 value.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, it is $6. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn, Road Trip Special. Chris Casso, what did you read this week?
So I've read this book called Dave from IDW. Dave, the A in Dave is spelled with a 4 because he's a robot. And basically the idea is that the Matrix happened. The robots gained sentience and killed our asses a long time ago. And then aliens came and they killed the aliens a long time ago. And because robots are really good at killing. And so they get pretty lazy afterwards. They become us. They live in houses. They have failed marriages. They pretty much suck at life. And Dave is getting to the point where he's a continual screw up. He's failing his job. He's failing his robot wife. They order a new child, and the child just basically wanks all the time and ignores Dave. And
the
then
child does what?
He masturbates all the time to robot porn. They're horrible robots.
I thought I misheard you, but apparently I did not.
Yeah, I thought he said winks.
Yeah.
He winks a lot.
And
he's
then,
got a virus.
Yes. And then aliens show up, and the aliens are like, yes, sure, peace. How about that? And, of course, they're not. And Dave used to be the first line of defense against killing aliens, and he's just like, oh, great, I can redeem myself and do something right. So it's basically just about an underdog idiot who's a robot killing aliens. The art is very...
That's a great elevator pitch.
Yeah. The art is very reminiscent of Jeff Darrow. It's got, like, some highly detailed sequences, but it's got some really great monster designs and everything on top of that. And, like, Dave's ripping off aliens' heads. Like, there's one where instead of just pulling the alien's pants down, he pulls its entire skin off. It's pretty great. So yeah, if you just like dark comedy, action, violence, robots, aliens, it's a pretty good combo.
This is cool. Your jam. Yeah.
The collection is $19.99. It's pretty good value for it. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, this week I read... Well, actually, I need to back this up because there's some context to this. A while ago, I asked Cole what his least favorite title was, and I read that. Mm-hmm. And that was Cross. That's Cross. The name of it.
Yep.
All right. So I did the same thing. I asked Chris what his least favorite comic was.
Interesting.
And he pointed me towards Civil War by Mark Millar. And... And you told me why you didn't like it so much, and I honestly think I've forgotten what you said, but it was more to the, I think it was more like you didn't think the characters were true to the characters.
A lot of it's bad characterization,
right?
Like horrible characterization, utterly horrible characterization.
All right. So I read it. I was trying to get that out of my mind because I didn't want it to color my reading. I didn't want to sit down and think to myself, I'm going to read a bad comic right now.
Right, right.
But the thing is, there are so many characters in this.
Yes.
Characters, I don't even know who half of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have mentioned this, but there's one point. I don't know if it's a spoiler. If it is a spoiler, I'll take this part out.
It's pretty old.
Okay, so Iron Man convinces Spider-Man to unmask himself.
Right.
And that was a bit of a shock to see that. I'm like, what are you doing? In reading this, I had a hard time trying to figure out who the good guy was.
Yeah.
In a book of superheroes.
Yeah.
But the only thing I want to mention about it, aside from all these other things I've just mentioned, is that when I read a comic or any book that has had a cinemization, that's not a right word. It's been made into a movie.
Yeah.
I read the voices of the characters in the actor who played that role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, when I was the voice for Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, you're reading this as a kid now.
No, I actually heard Stephen Colbert's voice because he voiced Mr. Impossible in the Fantastic Four ripoff that was on the Venture Brothers.
Yes, that's great.
Which is,
oh, yeah.
I think, I mean, I want to see a whole the Impossibles TV show.
Yes,
but anyway, so Civil War, I don't know if I'd recommend it. It was fine. Yeah, I didn't not like it.
Right.
I just like when I got through with it, I'm like, oh, so that happened.
Right.
I read that. I didn't get a lot of it. You know, sure there were inside jokes or character things that.
Do we have any insight into how much of this is going to be used in Captain America 3?
Core concept.
That's
what
I was going to ask.
The government.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Captain America: Civil War is based on this book.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my understanding.
So this is the interesting thing: is that that book is consistently one of Marvel's highest selling backlogs. Like this month's top 10 graphic novel sales, this was up there as number 4 or 5, and that means it beat a whole bunch of like new good things. So I'm judging. I judge a lot. This is from a particular era of Mark Millar that I loathe, and there's just a lot of problems with the story overall. Like, it's one of those things that they made Iron Man so much of a douche that he was unforgivable, and then they had to actually cheat to forgive him. They actually mind wiped him to the point where he's no longer guilty of the crimes he did because he's not the same Tony. And like, there were other books that supplemented this that basically reinforced that he was war profiteering during that, and this led to Captain America dying and all these things. And it's just like, you are all horrible people. He clones Thor, and the clone murders Black Goliath.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how can anyone ever forgive that? And then I finally watched Age of Ultron, and you know, after he created Ultron that murders lots of people, at the end of the movie, everyone's just like, oh, Tony. It's just like, it's very easy to forgive Tony, apparently, whereas Hank Pym, we don't let him live anything down. I don't let him live anything down. So,
all right, all right, Civil War. And that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play Quiz Time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week, Quiz Time is brought to us by Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
So you guys chose my acronym list here. Okay. So, first question. In what can only be considered a stroke of pure genius, the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon introduced a villainous team comprised of Gorilla Grodd, Monsieur Mala, and the gorilla boss of Gotham in their organization, GASP. What does GASP stand for? They are all talking gorillas.
Gorillas against superpowers?
Pretty close.
Oh.
Gorillas and apes seizing power.
Oh.
Ah.
Yes. Next one.
I think Cole gets a half point for that.
You get a half point for that.
I just made that up.
That's pretty good.
Wait, when you first heard that, did you get, like, really excited?
I got giddy.
You got giddy.
Yes.
Okay, continue.
Next question. Each letter of Captain Marvel's magic word, Shazam, stands for a different god or hero.
Oh, no.
Name them. S.
Solomon.
Correct. H.
Hercules.
Correct. A.
Achilles.
No. Moving on. Z.
Zeus?
Zeus. A, again.
It's not Achilles.
It is Achilles. Yep. There was a reason for the order.
Oh, there's an order?
Yeah, okay, so you'll get that one. The A you missed was Atlas.
Oh.
And then M.
Mercury.
There you go. Yes. So you I'll give 0.9 points to Cole and 0.1 to Ben.
Yeah.
Next, as a follow-up to that, one of Captain Marvel's villains is Stan Lee's stinky print whistle, whose alternate and much better name is Ibac. I-B-A-C. What do the letters for IBAC stand for? Nobody?
Nope.
I is for Ivan the Terrible. B is for Borgia. A is for Attila the Hun. And C is for Caligula.
Wow.
Much better than Stanley's stinky print whistle. Next up is the Marvel Cinematic Universe has made S.H.I.E.L.D. fairly famous, but few people know about its sister organizations, S.W.O.R.D., Armor, and the newly introduced STAKE. I'm not going to ask you what they stand for, but I'm going to ask you, can you tell me what any one of them does specifically?
Well, isn't S.W.O.R.D. the first line of defense against alien invasion?
Correct. Yep. You got it.
Way to go, Cole!
Hey! Yeah. I read that miniseries and it was lame. Yeah. What were the other ones?
Armor.
I think those are sorority sisters allied against Tony Stark.
They're against...
That's a pretty good one.
Iron.
They provide clothing.
They hate robots.
That one is alternate reality monitoring and operational response.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And then the final thing, just as a follow-up for that...
Was that an Excalibur thing?
No, that was like in Marvel Zombies, because zombies kept on jumping around.
Oh, okay.
As a bonus, when Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, gained control of S.H.I.E.L.D., he dismantled it and renamed it Hammer. What did Hammer stand for? Nope, sorry.
Nope.
Make these not fun.
Nope.
It's a trick question.
Okay.
Nothing. Osborn told Victoria Hand that it stands for something, and when she asked what, he told her, get on that for me.
All right.
I remember that, yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, that's quiz time. Thanks. And that's our show. Thank you for listening. You can find everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. You can also come to 319 Northeast 45th Street, where you find the front door to the Comics Dungeon, or you can come here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can find any and all of our episodes at the perfectbound at perfectboundpodcast.com. you can email us any quiz questions you want, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. subscribe to us on iTunes, check us out, leave us a comment, send us an email. We're lonely here, and we'll see you next week.
So lonely.